is the Good Glow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like sleep, fertility, nutrition, gut health, and much more, as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say this podcast is sponsored by Emma. Emma mattresses are created by an in-house team of sleep experts who use only the best foams and the latest foam technologies. The Emma products are designed with you in mind and sure to have you waking up feeling energetic and refreshed. For a limited time, listeners of the Good Glow Health podcast can save a massive 42% on orders placed through emma-mattress.ie/podcast. You can find this link in this episode's description. Today on the Good Glow Health, I speak to dietitian Orla Walsh about children's health and their diet. We touch very briefly on nutrition in pregnancy before moving on to weaning, supplements and fussy eaters. Orla has so many tips on how to get your kids to eat well and how to introduce them to new foods. Having experienced it all herself with her own son, Orla is a wealth of knowledge and speaks too about the importance of eating as a family, what we should be putting in their lunchboxes, how we should refer to treats as sometimes foods, and how we should never ever offer an alternative. I hope you love it. Orla Walsh, welcome to the Good Glow Health.
Thanks for having me.
It's so nice to sit down with you again. I think on my original podcast, The Good Glow, you were my second guest, or maybe my first guest. No, Dearham was my first guest. You were my second.
Oh, no way. You hit it well. And yeah. You definitely didn't tell me.
And I still get messages about that podcast to this day. It was so informative. And when I was putting together The Good Glow Health, I felt like it was really important to talk about children's health. And you have a brilliant Instagram page, Feed Your Pal, which is all about nutrition in kids. So thank you so much for today.
Oh no, thanks for having me on.
So let's start with, oh God, there's so many questions, and I put this out on my Instagram yesterday and it was just bombarded with questions because I suppose people are busy mums and dads. We're all trying to do our best, but of course we're going to worry about our little ones because we want them to have the best of everything. But often they come along and they refuse to eat or they won't eat a certain food group, and it turns into a worrying time. So let's start, I suppose, with nutrition and pregnancy. We might just touch a little bit on that. And when you're pregnant, you're worried about what you're putting into your body and how much of that is going to your little baby.
Okay, so firstly, mom guilt starts at conception, and that's a really important takeaway point. So as soon as you get pregnant, you start going, okay, I want to eat better than I ever have before, more nutritious food. And then all of a sudden you can't face food, or you're puking the whole time, or you just, you know, the idea of putting a green vegetable into your mouth is just horrific. And, you know, that can last for the whole entire pregnancy or can be a little bit of a phase. But I suppose the most important thing to think about during pregnancy is my baby is, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, is a parasite. It will take everything it wants from you, and the only person who suffers during a poor nutrition time is you. So that's a really, really important takeaway. Your baby is fine and you're the only person who suffers. And that actually gives mums a lot of relief, even though they should care more about themselves, but we don't. But that's a whole new podcast, I'm sure. So when it comes to pregnancy, it's about food safety more so than anything else. It's just like, don't get sick and try not to get sick. So it's food hygiene, storing foods correctly. You can eat things up to their best by date, but you have to throw them out after the use by date. You have to wash your hands before meals. You have to cook your eggs and your meats fully. You just need to avoid certain foods, like the fish that you have to avoid. You're not really going to eat in Ireland much anyway, which is shark, marlin and swordfish. You then have to avoid certain cheeses. So generally the really nice ones with the white rind or with the blue bits in them, so a blue cheese. But otherwise, it's a fairly you just have to focus on variety as much as possible. And, you know, it's just one person going through pregnancy will be a whole different kettle of fish than another. Some go off food and don't want to eat. Some people, all they want to do is eat. So it's just a different thing. I suppose people want to know about calories sometimes. Firstly, I would encourage people not to count calories during pregnancy. But like in terms of what is needed extra, it's equivalent to around a bite of an apple in first trimester. That's, you barely need any extra. And then in the second trimester, it's equivalent to an apple. So it just gives you an idea. Third trimester, you need around 400 calories extra. But, you know, you are moving less and stuff like that. And, you know, you might not be able for all that much in terms of volume in the third trimester because the baby's big and getting in the way of your belly. So it's just variety, hydration, and then iron-rich foods as much as possible. In Ireland now, we tend to, around 50% of Irish women don't get enough iodine. And iodine comes from fish and milk and dairy, basically. Generally, it does come from seaweed, but we're not big seaweed eaters here. So I would encourage people to eat, white fish maybe twice a week or oily fish once a week. There's no limit on white fish. There's no limit on shellfish. But on oily fish, keep it to once or twice a week. But I would encourage around 3 to 5 portions of dairy a day. Mm. And for a lot of pregnant women, that's all they can manage, is the dairy. And, you know, thank God for yogurt is what most women say. But, I would focus on those points. In terms of alcohol, obviously less is more. And then there's new research coming out all the time on caffeine, and there's a new enough one as well, recent, that said absolutely no caffeine. But really, it's 200 milligrams or less. So what that looks like is a cup of tea is 50 milligrams and a cup of coffee is 100. So you're talking about a cup of coffee a day or 2 cups of tea a day. I wouldn't push the boundaries, and I would try and keep it below the 200. And if you're getting coffee from a coffee shop, really go for decaf, because a coffee could have anywhere between 250 to 550 milligrams of caffeine in a cup. So, there's nothing to tell you how much is in the cup as well that you're getting. So when it comes from a coffee shop, decaf.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant advice. I suppose we might just skip over formula and breastfeeding. And I think that's just such a huge topic that maybe we just won't get into today. But when your little baby arrives and you're weaning, there's so many different methods and ways to do it. And one person may be, letting their child pick up the food. Another person will be mashing the hell out of it for hours, which was the type of mum I was. So when should we be introducing like variety into their diet?
So with weaning, generally speaking, try and get it as close to 6 months as possible. But your baby will guide you. My little fella was 5 months. He was 10 kilos at 5 months, which is the weight of a 1-year-old. But he was ready. He was sitting up. He was grabbing food. I had so many intentions like mums. I was like, I'm doing baby-led weaning, and I was going to do all these things. I was going to start with only green veg and then move on to the white, and I had all this in my head. His first food was a 99 ice cream that his cousin shoved in his face. And his second food was, his second try of anything was he picked up the spoon of my latte and started sucking on that. And I was like, this isn't going well. Do you know what? It's just about getting them comfortable with trying food. That's as simple as it is. It's just, and don't be scared to move on with textures. Like the moving on with textures, I think is scary for mums. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage a first aid course, just so that you're comfortable with what's a gag and what's a choke, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't choke often, but they gag often. And that's scary enough for mums, especially first time mums. But I would say focus on the veggies to start off. And I would certainly, like I had intended, the green and the white to begin with, just so they get used to that kind of, they're born liking sweet and salty. Mm-hmm. So that sort of taste. When it comes to weaning, it's about variety and moving comfortably at a pace, but there will be natural disruptions. I was just even thinking back, like when my little fella went into creche at 7 months and he was sick until Christmas. So he was sick, and that, you know, meant that we didn't progress with textures like I wanted and all these things. So just don't panic. You know, there is plenty of time. In an ideal world, you would just focus on textures, tastes, and lots of different tastes as possible, lots of different plants as possible, and, you know, bring them up in the textures as soon as they're able. Don't stall with that. Have as much fun as possible, and messy is always good.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I remember when Pia was at that stage, like I was sick and I was going through chemo, and she was a great little eater when she was in her high chair, and she always had fish every day and mashed up with potatoes and broccoli and all that. Then she turned, I'd say shortly after she was 13, 14 months, was like absolutely not eating this. She started to only want tomatoes and olives and pasta. So I was stuck with those for a while, refused to eat meat for me, like would just not have none of it. And then I sent her to creche when I was in my recovery. And they'd say she had two spaghetti bolognese's today. And then I pick her up the next day, two shepherd's pies today. I couldn't believe it. But it's very important to note that the role models that they have around them, and you know, they'll often just follow the crowd. And if the little kid beside them is eating a spaghetti bolognese, they're going to too. So I think lots of people were asking about fussy eaters. And what I do is I sit Pia down with her cousins as much as possible. They're all bigger. They're all great eaters. And she kind of learns from them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you see them in creche, you're like, you are making a mockery of me.
Yeah,
I remember like my little fella insisting that we fed him his bottle of milk, right? He wouldn't even hold the bottle. He went like a 4 month old baby basically in your arms and like couldn't use his hands, and we had to feed him his bottle. And we went into creche and he was sitting with all the lads on a bench drinking his bottle one handed, and I was like, you little brat. So the thing is that there's lots of different reasons they could be doing it. Attention is one. So if they've spent all day with the minder or with creche or with granny and grandpa or whoever, if you bring in like 10 minutes of story time or play before their dinner, it can help with the attention seeking side of it.
Okay.
Because they sometimes they can't tell the difference between your reactions. So they don't know if you're, you know, it's like they're aegis, but they haven't learned all the emotions yet. So they just know that doing something gets your attention and they love your attention. So we've started bringing in stories 10 minutes before the dinner, just because he's been in creche all day. And then it's independence, do you know, it's part of them learning. And, you know, last week my fella wouldn't have bananas, and this week he cried when his banana was finished, you know. So they do kind of change from week to week. Mm. And they are just showing off their independence. It usually starts around 18 months or, you know, but girls, I would think girls do these things a bit sooner, and they're learning to say no, and they're learning, actually, I don't have to eat everything I'm given. And it's just a part of their development, but it's really annoying. But the most important thing you can do is not react.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the competitive edge has to come out. Do not let them win. Do not let them see an emotional reaction or any sort of reaction to what they'll eat or what they won't. And that's one of the hardest things as a parent, because you're like, that took me 45 minutes to make.
Yeah.
So that's why I always start off with small portions and give them more if needed, just because there can be so much waste. The other thing is that they can fill up between meals. So they can fill up on fluids and they can fill up on snacks. So just if they're not eating their meals, just have a look at their snacks and go, am I giving them a little bit too much? Same with fluids. Try not to give them fluids, you know, in the hour before their meal, and don't give them the water with their meal, kind of give it after, because they can fill up with fluids quite a lot and eat a lot less for you because of that. I think the scariest meal of all is if they won't eat their dinner. Mm. Because you're just convinced they won't sleep, and you know, then they do or then they don't, you know. It's just every day is different. But I would just make sure that they're not filling up in fluids beforehand. You're not overdoing it on the milk, so certainly when they're toddler age, not more than 600 mils a day. So just make sure, even drop it to 300 mils if you need to, and then bring in some yogurt and cheese to make that up. But focus in on fluids and just be patient. They, you know, you just have to keep trying. Like, we're not born with all our taste buds. You probably remember the first time you had beer or red wine and you thought, God, this is gross. And now look at us, red wine, blue cheese, we adore it because we tried it around 16 mm-hmm. times and we grew a taste bud. So just be patient as you can and keep offering it.
And when should we offer an alternative? Like never. If never.
We shouldn't. No, I do. I do. Sometimes I am weak, like a lot of us are, but in theory, never. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you offer an alternative, they're like deadly. Okay, so if I kick up a fuss, I get what I really mm-hmm. want.
And do you feel like more and more kids now are refusing to eat meat, or is it my imagination? Because a couple of my friends have kids and they're like, my child won't touch chicken. What is it about it?
It's to be honest, they can do it with any food group. Mm-hmm. And it can be a textural thing. Mm. And I think if we think back, especially with the meat, is how nervous we were. We were convinced they couldn't chew. Do you know, and they don't even need teeth to chew. But we were convinced. So we have blended the crap out of the meat until, you know, so mm-hmm. it can be a texture thing and the moving off onto the textures, you know, too slowly, which we're all devils for, especially with the meat, because we just see that as a choking risk. So it can be a texture thing. I suppose it can be a taste thing, but, you know, a lot of meats and things like that are within sauces. So I suppose on my next one, where the difference I'll probably make is I'll give more foods individually for longer, because I think I moved my little fella up to composite meals, so all in one meals, so like stews and spaghettis and everything, chicken curry, as much fast as possible, because I wanted him eating what we were eating. And sometimes I feel like, oh, maybe he didn't grow taste bud for that, maybe he didn't try that enough as an individual food to grow a taste bud, and that's why he's finicky with it now. So you know, I there can be lots of reasons, but it can come down to texture a lot. And sometimes if they're not that hungry, they're just not arsed chewing. They're like, well, this takes a lot of effort, but the potato barely takes any chews. So, you know, they're funny little things. They just want to be finished with their meal within 15 minutes and they just want to be playing.
We also found that when Pia got rid of her Dodies, that all of a sudden she had this appetite. And we realised that, you know, we were the type of parents that Pia could just find a Dodie and pick it up and we wouldn't hide them. We wouldn't kind of say you can only have them at nap times. They were just in our house. Yeah. So instead of putting the spoon into her mouth, the Dodie was in her mouth.
Yeah.
And when we got rid of the Dodies and really kind of addressed that, because I think I just refused to kind of acknowledge how reliant she was on them. And I rang my mum, I remember, and I said, Mum, she's just ate whole meal because she didn't have her Dodie. So that's another way in which that could be blocking, kind of. They'd rather suck on a Dodie than eat a chicken curry, like.
Oh yeah, and that's such a common problem for mm-hmm. parents, and you were so good to realise it. And I think that's common as well in both breastfeeding and bottle feeding, or mixture if you're doing that the baby doesn't have a Dodie too much, because they do, they love it. They when they love it, they really love it, you know, and they would rather suck in the Dodie than do nearly anything else.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first I wanted to tell you a little more about Emma. Made right here in Ireland, the Emma mattress comes with a 10-year guarantee and is delivered for free and straight to your front door. If you're not 100% convinced, you can return it hassle-free for a full refund. Try Europe's most awarded mattress now for 200 risk-free nights and discover the secret to a great night's sleep. The Emma mattress consists of three high-quality foams that perfectly adapt to your body to offer you the right amount of support, pressure relief and comfort, while the breathable materials help keep you cool even during the warmest nights. Just the thing you need to wake up feeling energetic and refreshed. Now, back to the conversation. I got so many messages from people worried sick about their kids eating green veg. And my Pia would eat fruit until the cows come home, but, you know, put a vegetable in front of her, and her, like every other child, I'm sure, runs a mile. So how are we, or should we be making secret sauces? Should we just be starting them earlier with veg?
So that's why, you know, it was my ambition to not start with 99 ice creams and start with the veg and really focusing on the veg. And I do try and give more veg than fruit across the day, because he'll eat fruit all day long. Mm-hmm. He loves it. He'll eat it until it hurts his bottom, like, and you know, he's giving himself diarrhea. But like, yeah, it is important. And you just have to keep giving it. And it's, you know, it just has to be more prominent than the fruit as much as possible. And I would do both, because you want them to get, you see, when they're in that growing stage, they grow like up to three. They're growing like a centimeter a month. Like it's just madness. And they're, when you look at per kilogram weight, the requirements for iron are like nearly four times, you know, than ours. Or zinc is like three times. Vitamin C, you know, four times. Vitamin D and calcium, five times. Like, their requirements per kilogram of weight, like, it's just super high. So I would put things in sauces quite a lot, and I try and give at least once a day a vegetable that it's on its own, that he has to pick up and either throw or eat. But, you know, it is just back to patience, because they might ignore it for the first few times, and then a few times after they'll pick it up. A few times after, then they'll just put it in their mouth and spit it out. A few times after, they might give it a chew and might swallow it and not eat all of it and just a little bit. And then a few times later, they might actually start eating it. So it's a really slow, progressive thing. Mm. But perhaps give a very small amount and give it with a vegetable that they do like. And it's just not to overwhelm them with how much you're giving them. But just keep giving it. You just have to. And it's such a slow, painful process at times. But it takes so much patience to be a parent.
Yeah, that's really good advice, not to give up. Because I have been guilty of giving up in the past, and I'd say, oh, Pia doesn't like carrots because I tried to give them to her twice, you know. But yeah, if you just keep going with it and don't give up. I think we should go on and talk about something I suppose we're all worried about at the moment, which is COVID, and we're out of routine. Yeah. Meal times are splashed across the day. We don't know what's going on. There's too much snacking. And now all of a sudden we have to go back to creche, Montessori and school. And we're worried about lunchboxes and what we should be putting in them. Pia loves a ham sandwich. I'm like, should she be having ham every day? You know, what is the alternative?
Ideally, no, but they'll always eat a ham sandwich, won't they? And they all do. And we grew up on them. And sure, look at us, alive and well.
Just about.
So I suppose the issue with a ham sandwich is the salt content mainly. So it's trying to, you know, I sometimes compromise where I soak the crap out of the ham and boil it up myself and cut it into slices. So there's very little salt left in it. But it is trying to mix up those proteins as much as possible. I think the best takeaway point from a lunchbox is it eaten or not? Because the best lunchboxes are ones that are eaten. Just always acknowledge the fact that they have hardly any time in school, like hardly any time to eat. And like other cultures, like the French, they have loads, you know, they just really, they do lunchtime better for kids, but they have hardly any time. So you have to make it quick and easy as well. And the humble sandwich is quick and easy for them to eat, you know, that they can pick it up and they can chew on it and take their time. They can even put it in their pocket while they're out and playing, you know. So when it comes to lunch boxes, just think, do I have a carbohydrate in there? Do I have a protein? Do I have a dairy? Do I have a colour? And then put in water as well. So ideally, you'd put in a fruit and a vegetable. So, you know, a small bit of each. The carbohydrate, you see, their fiber requirements aren't as high as you think. So I think a lot of people lose sleep over the white bread, brown bread issue. But so I wouldn't worry as much as you think about that part. You know, just try and have it mostly brown bread in your household. But do try and mix up the proteins, because it's the hardest thing. But like the ham sandwich, just they that always comes back eaten. So that's a, you know, it is a tough one.
And a good thing as well, maybe to suggest, because I heard this great interview yesterday on the radio, and the lady was saying, you know, if you have some chicken in your fridge from dinner, throw that on their sambo the next day. And Pia will not eat cheese for me, but I guarantee she's starting Montessori this week. If I gave her a cheese sandwich, she would come home and it would be gone, because she'd just do it in there. So it's kind of a good way to introduce new food to them, if you kind of just send it in and they might just get on with it and eat it in there.
Yeah, they don't tend to be as fussy in there. Sure, they don't. Mm. And yeah, leftovers going in with the sandwich is a great idea. And, you know, also depending on their age, use the lettuce to prevent sogginess, because if it's a soggy sandwich, they won't eat it. So get like the likes of iceberg lettuce and put it on either side of the bread. And it just means the filling won't wet the bread and it won't create a soggy sandwich. So that's another tip for parents, because, you know, they are funny about textures.
Yeah. And in terms of vitamins, say if your child's on a multivitamin, is that enough vitamin D, or should we be giving them a separate vitamin D supplement?
Well, the multivitamin would certainly give them enough vitamin D. So with vitamin D, the guidelines suggest 5 micrograms between Halloween and St. Patrick's Day, just because they're not as, you know, we just can't make it from the sun during those times. That said, if your child has darker skin, you might need to give it all year round, or you might need to give a slightly higher dose. Redheads tend to be the best at making vitamin D. So generally speaking, the guidelines suggest just vitamin D and that's all they need. However, if you have a child, especially if they're on the lower than the kind of 25th centile for height and weight, or certainly for weight, they might need an iron supplement if they're not having like formula or something with iron added.
In terms of our kids drinking bottles of milk, what age should they be when they're giving those up and maybe swapping it out for a cup of milk?
So as soon as possible. So I'm really slow on this. That's definitely something that I need to improve on. But no, so they need a free flowing mug, certainly from one. And then ideally moving them to a cup with no lid on it as soon as possible, because it just helps with oral motor skills and like the muscles in their mouth and speech and things. So what I do is I have a little cup and I bring it to the bath. Like, it stops them drinking the bath water as well, licking the foam. But I fill that up with water and he practices in there because he's just hopeless. Like, he's just not good at it. And but you're trying to move them onto the lidless, the cup as much as possible. But do you know, when it's something like milk, you're just like, oh, they're going to spill it down them and I'm going to have to change them. So yeah. I can understand where strawed cups and the free flowing come in. But ideally, you'd be using lidless.
Right. During COVID, we were all getting treated much more than usual with the biscuits and the comfort food. And how do we get the kids off the sugary treats, and how often should we be treating them?
Well, the thing is that 1 in 4 children are overweight or obese. And so the advice would be different, slightly different for those children than, you know, for, like, there's some children that are so thin and, you know, any nutrition is good nutrition for them. So, you know, it's hard to say a guideline. You want there to be rules within your household, or guidelines or aims or intentions at least. And it's what you guys do. So for some people, it'll be, you know, treats at the weekend. You might want to call them with the kids sometimes foods rather than everyday foods. It's just the idea of food as a treat can be a triggering thing for them. But, you know, it's either weekends or it could be every day after dinner. Whatever suits your household and your body type. We're bigger in our household. We're at risk of putting on weight the whole time. We need to be careful. That said, I think people would be horrified how easygoing I am with these things with my son. So if he sees me eating something and he wants some of it, I'm not going to say no. Because if I didn't want him eating it, I shouldn't be eating it around him. I should be doing it when he's in bed or something, or, you know, or when I'm out with friends. But so if I'm eating chocolate and he's like, Mum, well, he doesn't say Mum yet. He doesn't say anything, but he should. But I would give him a little bit, or I'd give him a lick of my ice cream or something. Or if I'm having cake, he'd sit in my lap and expect some mouthfuls. So it's kind of to reflect what your family, what the intention that you want for your family. And it's different with every family and it's different with every body type. And, you know, I suppose it's not a treat if it's all the time. It's not a treat if it's more than once a day. Definitely not. A good aim is, you know, a few times a week.
Okay. And when you say sometimes foods, do you actually say that to the child? This is a sometime food.
I try.
I really do try, because the thing is, even though we have a serious problem in Ireland with overweight and obesity in children, you know, 85, it, like Safeview did this research that suggested that 85,000 children in Ireland will die prematurely because of overweight and obesity. So it is a big problem, but we also have a big problem with disordered eating and the growing number of people with disordered eating. So one of the most important, and what I should have probably started the podcast with, is it's the relationship with food you're trying to build with your child. Mm-hmm. So there's no good or bad food, you know. So if you kind of just say you eat all your broccoli and you get ice cream, that's suggesting that broccoli is not something you want to, you know, eat, and ice cream definitely is, and it's not good with the relationship. And it's not good with the relationship as well to be seen like, oh, that's a bold food, we shouldn't be having that much, mm-hmm. you know. So it's really important to nourish their relationship with food. So I do say sometimes foods and everyday foods. But
that's such a good tip. That's a brilliant tip.
Yeah, it's just, it's so easy. They're like, oh, we can't have that every day because yeah. that's not an everyday food. And it's like when, if they want something, if they're old enough and they're like, can we have an ice cream? They might be like, we didn't have one, you know, this week. We had mm-hmm. it sometimes, so we had it like maybe a week or two. They kind of pick up on that a little bit more. Mm. And it, you know, there are healthier foods and less healthy foods, of course there are. But you just want to focus on the healthier stuff a little bit more often, because the sometimes foods, they do come in. Mm-hmm, you know, they're part of life. Well, we won't die if we never have chocolate again, but we might be miserable, you know.
I found it, Pia, you know, this summer was her first, the first time she kind of was enjoying ice pops and things like yeah. that. And I was getting a bit worried because she just was constantly asking for Tangle Twisters. And so we started to make them ourselves. And now Jamie makes little green ones. So he puts spinach, kiwi and apple, and we make them ourselves.
Yeah.
But when you blend that up and put it into your freezer, are you just turning it into sugar?
Juice there isn't as actually that much nutrition in it, and the sugars are what we call free sugars, and free means they've been taken out of their cells, and when they're free they're not as healthy as the sugars that are not free, and dentists would very much be against them. They're not good for our teeth. When you blend stuff, all the nutrition is still within that ice pop, or all that nutrition is still within the glass. Some of the sugars, more of the sugars would be free, but you haven't removed the fiber, you haven't removed a lot of the nutrients. The best case scenario is to eat them, but you're talking about, like, that sounds like a very healthy ice pop, you know, so I wouldn't worry about that. And it sounds like a smoothie ice pop as well, which would be better than a juice ice pop.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose a lot of the questions that came in, people are just very worried about that their child doesn't have a varied diet. And I heard this great tip. I don't know where it was. It was on TV, I think. And a lady was saying that she gets these kind of plates, and she might just drop in a bowl of olives into the playroom. And then the next day it might be carrot sticks or cucumber sticks. And if the kids are kind of playing around the food, they might just pick it up and have a taste. And I think that was just such a super tip.
That's wonderful, because there's no reaction. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, imagine going to a restaurant and the chef comes and he stands over you or sits at your table mm-hmm. and he watches you eat. And he, you know that he wants you to eat it, and you know he wants you want him, could be a she chef, but that she's like, you know, do you like it? And that's what we're doing every dinner time. Mm. We're honing in on them, and we have an emotional reaction to how much they eat or whether they like it or not. But when you just leave it around them, it takes that emotion out. There's no pressure on them, and they can try it, they can dislike it, they can, you know, and they are a little bit distracted there as well, so they're, you know, it's more likely to eat it and swallow mm-hmm. it and stuff. So that's a fantastic idea. I suppose the most important thing there is, it's similar to, you know, the relationship with food. It's just, if you listen, the parent's job is to provide, and the child's job is to decide how much they eat and what they eat. You can't force feed a child, you just can't. So you'd love to sometimes, but you can't. So you just provide the variety. Mm-hmm. They decide if they're going to eat it, they decide how much, and you just have to keep providing that variety. The one of the worst things that we can slip into, and which we do, is we give them things we know they'll eat so much. And what I'd suggest is give them what you know they'll eat with something that is new or with something that they usually discard. So even a tiny bit of it, but don't stop trying and just try not to fall into that. And then, you know, and I suppose the best thing you could say about a parent as a provider of good nutrition is the atmosphere they create. Are they creating an atmosphere? Does the child want to try new things? And if they do, it's, you know, it's a lot to do with the fact that the parent isn't pressuring them.
Yeah.
It's all well and good.
It's all just such brilliant advice, though. And I think so many of us may have issues with food that we're like subconsciously passing down to our kids, like you say, with the good and bad food. So I call food good and bad, and I'd say things like that. So it's really important to have these conversations to just understand how we're communicating with the kids about this.
Yeah. Monkey see, monkey do. My husband's not allowed to put ketchup and dip his vegetables into it anymore.
And I'll leave you with this question, Orla: how important is it for us all to sit down as a family and eat our meals together?
It's really important, and we should do it as much as possible. It's really hard, and it's harder. It's hard when they're young because they eat so early, and, you know, it's hard then when they're older because they're out and about, and really your parental involvement is just driving them places and collecting them and stuff. So it is, I would certainly make time for it, maybe set days of the week or always at the weekend, or do it as much as possible. But it is really, really important because they learn a lot of their eating behaviors from you, a lot, and especially the mum. So the mum still has the number one role in the household when it's got to do with nutrition, what she eats. You know, the shopping list is very much dictated by her still, what foods are cooked, what meals are cooked. So they will take a lot from you. So it's really important. And it also gives a message across that food isn't just fuel. It's much, much more than that. And it's sociable to eat together. And like you said, it's a bit like creche, that if they're eating with all their pals, they'll eat more and they'll eat better. And if they're eating with you, hopefully they'll eat more and they'll eat better. Just don't watch them out of the corner of your eye.
Such brilliant advice. And can people come to see you with their children if they're worried about anything or they want to have a chat?
Yeah, absolutely, of course.
Great. Where can we find you, Orla?
So my website is just orlawalshnutrition.ie, and you can email me at orla@orlawalshnutrition.ie.
And there's great tips as well on your Instagram page, Feed Your Pal. So I would encourage worried parents to follow you there. So thank you so much for today. I learned so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Good Glow Health with thanks to Emma. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It would really mean the world. And if you'd like to send me a message about any topics you'd like me to cover, please do so on Instagram at georgie.crawford. Talk to you very soon.